Hey, listener, ever feel like conflict is kind of just like always right around the corner, especially at work?
Oh, yeah.
Today, we are diving deep into the world of conflict,
Ooh.
blame culture,
Yeah.
and taking responsibility. We've got two articles by Gerhard Friedrich.
Okay.
He's a bit of a project management guru.
Ah.
And they are cracked with insights on how to deal with those tricky moments when things go wrong and everyone starts pointing fingers.
It is fascinating, isn't it?
Yeah.
We tend to treat conflict like it's like the plague or
Right.
something to be avoided at all costs.
Yeah.
But Friedrich actually argues that conflict can be a really powerful catalyst for positive change
Okay.
if we learn to approach it constructively.
So maybe not a monster under the bed after all.
Right.
But how can conflict, with all its tension and potential for drama, actually be a good thing?
Well, Friedrich makes this interesting comparison to friction.
Okay.
So think about it.
Yeah.
Friction can certainly be destructive, but it's also what allows us to walk, drive a car,
Right.
even light a fire.
Right.
It generates energy.
Yeah.
And in the same way, conflict, when channeled effectively, can spark the creativity and the innovation
right.
that we need to find better solutions.
That's a pretty neat way to look at it.
Yeah.
So if we want to harness that energy, where do we even begin?
Right.
I'm guessing understanding the different types of conflict is a good starting point.
You're absolutely right.
Okay.
Friedrich highlights two fundamental types of conflict we often encounter.
Okay.
Goal conflict and method conflict. Goal conflict is pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
It arises when people have different objectives or desired outcomes.
So imagine a project team where the external members are pushing to expand the scope,
Right.
which means a bigger budget for them.
Yeah.
But the client and the internal project manager are trying to keep things lean and focused.
Yeah.
That's goal conflict in action.
A perfect example.
Okay.
And then you have method conflict,
uh-huh.
which is when people agree on the goal,
yeah.
but clash on the best way to achieve it.
Right.
Think about the classic debates over using agile versus waterfall methodologies.
Oh, yeah.
Everyone wants to deliver on time and within budget.
Right.
But the approach is a source of friction.
Ah, that reminds me of endless discussions on how to run meetings effectively.
Oh, yeah.
Same goal, clear communication, but totally different ideas on how to get there.
Right.
But Friedrich also points out something really interesting. Sometimes goal conflicts disguise themselves as method conflicts.
That's where things get really tricky.
Okay.
And it requires a deeper understanding of the motivations at play.
Okay.
Let's say you have a team that insists on a super detailed requirements document upfront. Instead of a more iterative approach,
yeah.
they might frame it as a desire for control and planning certainty,
mm-hmm.
but their hidden agenda could be to set the stage for budget increases later on through change requests.
Okay, so unmasking those hidden agendas is crucial.
Yeah.
But how do we even know where to look? What actually causes these conflicts to erupt in the first place?
Friedrich identifies two main sources.
Okay.
Information factors and differing values.
Okay.
Information factors can involve simple misunderstandings,
right.
lack of communication,
yeah.
or even just having access to different pieces of the puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
But it can also get more complex when people interpret the same information differently based on their role or perspective.
Okay, I can see how that could lead to some serious miscommunication and frustration.
Yes.
But differing values, that seems like it could get pretty intense.
Absolutely.
Especially in a workplace setting.
Friedrich uses the example of maximizing profit versus prioritizing employee well-being. Those are fundamentally different values
right.
that can lead to significant tension,
yeah.
especially in organizations where the bottom line often trumps everything else.
You're right. That's a classic ethical dilemma playing out in the real world.
Exactly.
Do you cut corners to save money?
Yeah.
Even if it means compromising quality
right.
or potentially putting employees at risk. How do you even find common ground when those foundational beliefs clash?
It's a tough one, and
yeah.
it requires a willingness to step outside of your own perspective
right.
and truly try to understand where the other side is coming from.
Yeah.
The problem is, if we don't tackle these conflicts head on, they can fester and lead to all sorts of negative consequences.
Yeah.
Decreased productivity, damaged relationships, even
yeah.
legal disputes.
Yikes.
Yeah.
So how do we move away from this blame game and towards something more constructive?
Right.
Friedrich talks about replacing the language of blame with responsibility.
Yes.
But how does that actually work in practice?
It's a subtle shift,
okay.
but it can make a world of difference.
Yeah.
You blame someone,
yeah.
you're basically shutting down any possibility for dialogue or learning.
Mm-hmm.
But when you focus on responsibility,
right,
you create a space for understanding the factors that contributed to the problem,
right,
and working together to find solutions.
So instead of asking who messed up,
right,
we're asking, okay, what happened?
Exactly.
And what can we learn from it?
Yes.
So we can prevent it from happening again.
Exactly.
That shift in mindset can be incredibly powerful in creating a culture where people feel safe to admit mistakes and learn from them without fear of punishment.
Absolutely.
This makes me think about the whole no blame culture idea.
Mm-hmm.
Is that really the answer, though? Friedrich seems to have some reservations about taking it too far.
Right.
Especially in project contexts,
mm-hmm,
where contracts and accountability come into play.
You've hit on a crucial point.
Okay.
He argues that while well-intentioned,
yeah,
a blanket no-blame policy can actually be problematic,
mm-hmm,
he reminds us that contracts often include clauses about fault and liability.
Right.
So when things go seriously wrong,
yeah,
legal teams get involved, and the focus shifts to protecting the company's interests,
yeah,
which might involve, well, assigning blame.
So it's like this idealistic bubble that bursts when the reality of contracts and legal implications hits.
In a way, yes.
Yeah.
And it's important to be aware of that reality.
Okay.
We can strive to create a blame-free environment.
Right.
But we also need to be honest about the fact that accountability matters,
yeah,
especially in a legal context.
So how do we navigate that delicate balance?
Right.
How do we encourage transparency and learning,
mm-hmm,
without creating a culture of fear?
Yeah.
Or ignoring the fact that actions have consequences?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right.
And Friedrich offers some practical steps for finding that sweet spot.
Okay.
First, he suggests we resist the urge to jump to conclusions,
mm-hmm,
and instead take the time to analyze the situation objectively.
Okay.
What factors contributed to the problem?
Yeah.
Were there any underlying systemic issues that need to be addressed?
So it's like playing detective.
Exactly.
For project management.
Yeah.
We need to gather all the clues and figure out the root cause of the delay.
Yes.
Not just who to blame.
Exactly.
Okay, so it's about open communication,
right,
a data-driven approach.
Yes.
And a willingness to look at the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
But once we've identified the whine,
right,
what happens next?
Yeah.
How do we actually get the project back on track without descending into chaos?
This is where that collaborative problem-solving mindset comes in.
Okay.
Instead of dictating solutions from the top down,
right,
engage the entire team in brainstorming creative ways to move forward.
Okay.
Maybe it involves adjusting the scope,
mm-hmm,
renegotiating the deadline,
right,
or bringing in additional resources.
So it's about turning a potential crisis into an opportunity for innovation.
Exactly.
A chance to rethink our approach and come up with even better solutions.
Precisely. And by framing the situation as a shared challenge,
right,
that requires collective responsibility and ingenuity,
mm-hmm,
you create an environment where people feel safe to contribute ideas,
yeah,
and work together to find the best path forward.
Okay.
Right.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But I can imagine there are times when emotions run high,
mm-hmm,
and it's hard to stay objective,
yeah,
and focused on problem solving.
Right.
How do we navigate those intense emotional responses that often accompany conflict?
Mm-hmm.
Especially when deadlines and reputations are on the line.
You're right.
Yeah.
Conflict can be incredibly emotionally charged.
Right.
And it's important to address that aspect of the situation.
Yeah.
Trying to ignore or suppress those emotions will only backfire.
Right.
Instead, create a space where people feel comfortable expressing their frustrations,
mm-hmm,
and anxieties.
So it's about acknowledging the emotional impact of the situation.
Exactly.
Validating those feelings.
Yes.
And letting people know that it's okay to not be okay.
Precisely.
Okay.
It's amazing how just allowing those emotions to be expressed can diffuse tension.
Yeah.
And create a more open and understanding environment.
It's like giving those emotions a chance to breathe so they don't bottle up and explode.
Yes.
And once those feelings have been acknowledged,
mm-hmm,
we can gently guide the conversation back to the problem-solving process.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's about finding that balance between emotional expression and rational analysis.
Exactly. And remember, it's okay to disagree as long as we do so respectfully,
right.
Focus on the issue, not the person.
Right.
It's about challenging ideas, mm-hmm. not attacking individuals.
Okay.
And I think that ties back to what we were saying earlier about depersonalizing the conflict.
Yeah.
Moving away from you versus me.
Right.
And toward a more collaborative us versus the problem approach.
Exactly.
When we can shift our perspective in that way,
yeah.
it becomes much easier to manage those intense emotions, mm-hmm. and find solutions that work for everyone involved.
Yeah.
We're all on the same team, ultimately.
Right.
And we need to remember that even in the midst of conflict.
This has been such an insightful conversation.
Yeah.
I don't know about you, listener.
Yeah.
But I'm already feeling more equipped to handle those tricky situations that inevitably arise in the workplace,
mm-hmm.
especially when it comes to navigating conflict,
yeah.
and finding that balance between accountability,
yeah.
and creating a positive error culture.
I agree.
Okay.
And what stands out to me is the power of language.
Hmm.
Simply shifting from blame to responsibility can transform the entire dynamic of a conflict,
mm-hmm.
and create a more collaborative and productive environment.
It's a subtle change.
Yeah.
But it has a ripple effect.
Absolutely.
And it underscores the importance of creating a culture where mistakes are seen as opportunities for learning and growth,
mm-hmm.
not as reasons to punish or shame.
Exactly.
Okay.
So, listener, next time you find yourself in the middle of a conflict,
right.
remember,
okay,
take a deep breath, depersonalize the situation,
right.
focus on understanding the root cause,
yeah.
and engage your team in finding a solution together.
And don't be afraid to embrace those moments of friction.
Oh, yeah.
They might just spark the next brilliant idea.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, one of Friedrich's examples that really resonated with me was his description of adrenaline junkies.
Okay.
Those individuals who seem to thrive on chaos and tight deadlines.
Oh, yeah. I've definitely encountered those types.
Yeah.
They're always burning the midnight oil.
Right.
Creating this whirlwind of urgency around them.
Yeah.
But it's like their definition of success is tied to how much stress they can endure.
Exactly. They equate frantic activity with effectiveness.
Uh-huh.
And anyone who doesn't subscribe to that always-on mentality,
yeah.
is viewed as, well, less dedicated.
Right, less committed.
What's interesting is that this behavior often stems from their past experiences.
Okay.
Perhaps they've only witnessed projects succeed under those high-pressure conditions, mm-hmm. so they've internalized that as the only way to get things done.
So if it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy,
right.
they create the chaos.
Yeah.
Then point to it as evidence that their way is the only way.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And this is where leadership comes in.
Yeah.
It's crucial to challenge those assumptions,
yeah.
and expose them to different ways of working.
Okay.
Friedrich suggests showcasing examples of successful projects,
right.
where a balance of planning, clear communication,
yeah.
and flexibility were key.
Show them that it is possible to deliver results,
right.
without sacrificing everyone's well-being in the process.
Exactly.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But how do we shift the mindset of someone who genuinely believes that their adrenaline-fueled approach is the only path to success?
It's not easy.
Right.
But it's possible.
Okay.
One effective strategy is to provide concrete evidence,
mm-hmm.
that a different approach not only works, mm. but can actually lead to better outcomes.
Okay.
Higher quality, increased productivity,
yeah.
and improved team morale.
Right.
And this ties into the broader theme of building a positive error culture.
Okay.
Which Friedrich emphasizes throughout his work.
Okay, so let's talk about error culture.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing it's the opposite of what we typically see in organizations.
Right.
You know, the finger pointing.
Yeah.
The fear of admitting mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
The scramble to cover things up.
You nailed it.
Yeah.
Friedrich challenges this deeply ingrained belief that errors,
mm-hmm.
especially in software development,
yeah.
are simply inevitable,
yeah.
and should be accepted as just the way things are.
Right.
He argues that while we can't eliminate all errors,
mm-hmm.
we can certainly strive to minimize them.
Okay.
And more importantly,
yeah.
we need to learn from every single mistake,
mm-hmm.
big or small.
That's a really interesting perspective.
Yeah.
It makes me think about all the areas in my own life where I've just accepted certain errors or inefficiencies as normal.
Yeah.
What if we applied that same level of scrutiny and commitment to improvement to everything we do.
That's a powerful thought, isn't it?
Yeah.
Imagine the possibilities if we constantly challenged the status quo and asked ourselves, how can we do this better?
Yeah.
And that's where the shift from blame to responsibility becomes so essential.
Right.
It's the foundation for creating that learning-oriented, continuously improving culture.
Okay, I'm on board with the idea.
Yeah.
But let's get practical for a minute.
Okay.
How do we actually implement this shift in a real-world setting?
Right.
Especially when there's so much pressure to deliver results and avoid any hint of failure.
Friedrich suggests starting with a simple but profound change in language.
Okay.
Instead of talking about who's to blame, we focus on who's responsible for finding a solution.
So it's about reframing the conversation entirely.
Exactly. Okay. Moving away from the blame game and toward a more collaborative approach. Exactly. Right. And that seemingly small shift in language can have a huge impact on team dynamics.
Right.
It creates a sense of shared responsibility.
Yeah.
And encourages people to work together to identify the root cause of the problem and find the best way to move forward.
So it's about focusing on the what and the how.
Right.
Rather than getting stuck in the who.
Exactly.
Okay.
But how do we make sure that people don't interpret this shift as letting them off the hook for their mistakes?
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
That's a valid concern.
Yeah.
And it's important to be clear that this is not about avoiding accountability altogether.
Okay.
It's about creating an environment where mistakes are seen as opportunities for learning and growth.
Right.
Not as punishable offenses.
So instead of reprimanding someone for making a mistake, you're empowering them to be part of the solution.
Precisely.
Okay.
And that leads to a more engaged, more accountable,
right,
ultimately more successful team.
Okay. But what about those situations where accountability really does matter?
Right.
You know, when there's been a serious error with real consequences.
That's a tough one.
Right.
How do you balance that need for accountability with the desire to create a blame-free environment? Friedrich acknowledges that there are times when we need to have difficult conversations about individual performance.
Right.
But even in those cases, the focus should be on understanding the factors that led to the mistake, not on assigning blame or making someone feel like a failure.
So it's more like, okay, this happened.
Right.
Let's figure out why. Let's make sure it doesn't happen again.
Yes.
It's about learning from the experience and implementing measures to prevent similar errors in the future.
Exactly. And that's where things like root cause analysis and process improvement come into play.
Right.
It's about treating the individual as part of a larger system, not as the sole source of the problem.
It's about recognizing that everyone makes mistakes.
Yeah.
What matters is how we respond to those mistakes.
Exactly.
Do we use them as fuel for growth? Or do we let them become a source of fear and division within the team?
That's such a critical point.
Right.
And it brings us back to Friedrich's observation about the tension between this ideal of a blame-free environment and the reality of legal contracts and accountability.
Right.
He highlights how in project settings, especially those involving large organizations, legal teams are often lurking in the background.
Oh, right.
Ready to step in if things go south.
Yeah.
It's like this unspoken reality that can undermine our efforts to create a truly blame-free environment.
So it's like we're operating within these two competing systems, the ideal and the real.
Right.
How do we reconcile that?
That's the challenge. And Friedrich offers some practical advice.
Okay.
He suggests that whenever possible, we should try to influence the design of contracts to align with the principles of a positive error culture.
Okay.
In other words,
build
that learning and responsibility mindset into the very foundation of the project.
So it's about being proactive and shaping the terms of engagement from the outset.
Exactly.
Okay.
But what if we don't have that level of influence over the contract?
Right.
What if we're inheriting a project with pre-existing legal frameworks that don't exactly promote a blame-free approach? That's a common scenario, unfortunately. Yeah. And in those cases, it's crucial to at least be aware of the potential for conflict and have strategies in place for navigating those choppy legal waters.
Right.
We might need another deep dive just on contracts and how to make them work for us, not against us.
That's a great idea for a future episode.
Yeah.
But for now, let's continue exploring Friedrich's insights on conflict resolution.
Okay.
He offers some really practical steps for turning those clashes into opportunities for growth, right?
He does.
Okay.
He outlines a seven-step process, which he draws from the Harvard method of negotiation.
Okay.
The first step, he says, is to depersonalize the conflict.
So instead of your idea versus my idea,
right,
it becomes option A versus option B.
Exactly.
Okay.
That helps to remove the emotional charge from the situation and allows for a more objective evaluation of the options.
It's like taking the ego out of the equation.
Right.
Which can be so difficult when you're in the heat of the moment.
You're right. It's not always easy.
Yeah.
But it's essential for having a productive conversation.
Okay.
Then the next step is to agree on criteria for evaluating those options.
Mm-hmm.
What are the key factors that will determine the best course of action?
So it's about establishing a shared understanding of what success looks like.
Exactly.
And how we're going to measure it.
Yes.
This ensures that the decision-making process is transparent and fair.
Exactly.
Right?
It's about creating a level playing field.
Okay.
Where everyone feels heard and respected. Mm-hmm. And once you have those criteria in place,
yeah,
the next step is to gather all the relevant information.
So do your research,
yeah,
analyze the data,
mm-hmm,
talk to the experts.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Basically, make sure you're approaching the decision from an informed perspective.
Precisely.
Okay.
The goal is to make a data-driven decision,
right,
not just go with your gut feeling.
Okay.
And once you have all the information,
yeah,
the next step is to evaluate the options together as a team.
So it's a collaborative process.
Absolutely. Yeah. Not just one person dictating the solution. Everyone involved should have a voice in the decision-making process.
Right, okay.
It's about leveraging the collective wisdom of the team,
yeah,
and ensuring that everyone feels ownership over the final decision.
It's about recognizing that everyone brings a unique perspective to the table,
mm-hmm,
and that those diverse viewpoints can lead to more creative and effective solutions.
Well said.
Okay.
And it's important to be open to adjusting the options as needed.
Right.
It's not about rigidly sticking to the initial ideas,
mm-hmm,
but about being willing to iterate and refine them based on the feedback and insights of the team.
So it's about embracing that agile mindset.
Exactly.
Being flexible and adaptable in the face of changing circumstances.
Yes.
But what if after all that,
mm-hmm,
you're still stuck?
Right.
What if you can't seem to reach a consensus as a team?
That's a great question.
Yeah.
And Frederick has a surprisingly honest take on this.
Okay.
He says, not all conflicts can be constructively solved.
Wait, so he's saying sometimes you just have to accept that things won't work out perfectly.
He acknowledges that in some cases, the best we can do is damage control.
Okay.
It's about minimizing the negative fallout,
mm-hmm,
and finding a way to move forward that causes the least amount of harm.
Okay, that's a reality check for sure.
Yeah.
But it's also reassuring to know that it's okay to not have all the answers.
Right.
And sometimes the most important thing is to just mitigate the damage and learn from the experience.
You've got it.
Okay.
And it's important to remember that we're all human.
Yeah.
And conflict is a natural part of human interaction.
Mm-hmm.
The key is to approach conflict with a mindset of curiosity.
Right.
Understanding,
mm-hmm,
and a willingness to learn and grow.
It's right.
Not about winning or losing.
Right.
But about finding a way forward together.
That's a great reminder.
Yeah.
But I'm also wondering,
mm-hmm,
how do we handle the emotional side of conflict?
Right.
Because let's face it,
yeah,
these situations can get pretty heated.
Yeah.
Especially when there's a lot at stake.
That's so true.
Right.
Emotions can run high when we're dealing with conflict.
Yeah.
And it's important to acknowledge that reality.
Mm-hmm.
We can't just ignore or suppress those feelings.
Right.
In fact, trying to do so can often make things worse.
So how do we manage those emotions effectively?
Yeah.
Do we just let everyone vent their frustrations and hope for the best?
It's more nuanced than that.
Okay.
Friedrich emphasizes the importance of creating a safe space for people to express their emotions.
Okay.
That means actively listening, validating their feelings.
Right.
And acknowledging the impact the conflict is having on them.
So it's about creating a container for those emotions.
Yeah.
Allowing them to be expressed and acknowledged without judgment or dismissal.
Exactly. Okay. And once those emotions have been aired,
yeah,
you can gently guide the conversation back to the problem-solving process. It's about finding that balance between emotional expression and rational analysis.
It's like allowing those emotions to breathe so they don't explode and derail the entire conversation.
Exactly.
And I imagine that ties back into the importance of depersonalizing the conflict, right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
When we can separate the people from the problem,
yeah,
it becomes easier to manage those intense emotions and focus on finding a solution that works for everyone involved.
This is all starting to make so much sense.
Yeah.
But I'm also curious.
Mm-hmm.
Are there any specific techniques or strategies for depersonalizing conflict?
Yeah.
Because in the heat of the moment, it can be really tough to separate yourself from the issue at hand.
You're right. It takes practice.
Yeah.
One technique Friedrich suggests is to use I statements instead of you statements.
Okay.
So instead of saying you're wrong, you might say, I see things differently.
Okay.
Or I have a different perspective on this. It's
a
subtle shift,
yeah.
but it can make a big difference in how the message is received.
It's about taking ownership of your own thoughts and feelings without attacking or blaming the other person.
Exactly. And it's also helpful to focus on shared goals and interests. Even in the midst of conflict, there are usually some areas of agreement.
Right.
Reminding ourselves of those commonalities can help to de-escalate the situation and create a more collaborative atmosphere.
It's like finding that common ground.
Right.
That shared purpose that can unite us even when we disagree on the specifics.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it's about remembering that we're all on the same team, ultimately. We might have different opinions, but we're all working towards the same objective, the success of the project, the team, or the organization as a whole.
Okay.
Right.
This has been such an insightful conversation.
Yeah, it has.
I don't know about you, listener, but I'm already feeling me equipped to handle those tricky situations that inevitably arise in the workplace.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to navigating conflict and finding that balance between accountability and creating a positive error culture.
I agree.
Okay.
And what stands out to me is the power of language.
Yeah.
Simply shifting from blame to responsibility can transform the entire dynamic of a conflict and create a more collaborative and productive environment.
It's a subtle change.
Yeah.
But it has a ripple effect.
Absolutely.
And it underscores the importance of creating a culture where mistakes are seen as opportunities for learning and growth.
Right.
Not as reasons to punish or shame.
Absolutely.
So, listener, next time you find yourself in the middle of a conflict, remember, take a deep breath, depersonalize the situation, focus on understanding the root cause, and engage your team in finding a solution together.
Absolutely.
This has been such an eye-opening conversation.
Yeah.
I feel like I've gained a whole new toolkit for navigating conflict, not just in the workplace, but in all areas of life.
What's fascinating is how these seemingly small shifts in language, in mindset, in approach can have a profound impact on the way we experience and resolve conflict.
It's all about creating a culture of responsibility, learning, and continuous improvement.
Right.
And remember, listener, even those moments of friction, those clashes of ideas and perspective, can be incredibly valuable if we approach them with curiosity, empathy, and a genuine desire to find the best solution for everyone involved.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right, listener, let's shift gears a bit and talk about some practical applications of everything we've been discussing.
Okay.
Imagine this. You're leading a project, and it becomes painfully obvious that you're not going to hit that looming deadline.
Yes, the dreaded missed deadline scenario.
Right.
It's a situation that can trigger a lot of anxiety and blame.
Oh, yeah.
But it's also a prime opportunity to put these principles into action.
Yeah, my stomach is already doing clip-flops just thinking about it.
Right.
The stress, the scramble to figure out what went wrong.
Yeah.
The inevitable finger-pointing.
Right.
It's a recipe for disaster.
Exactly. And this is where Friedrich's emphasis on shifting from blame to responsibility becomes so crucial.
Okay.
Instead of wasting energy on finding a scapegoat, the focus needs to be on understanding why the project veered off track.
So it's like channeling our inner detective, but for project management.
Yes.
We need to gather all the clues and figure out the root cause of the delay.
Right.
Not just who to blame.
I love that analogy. Mm-hmm. And just like a good detective, you need to be thorough and objective, talk to everyone involved, review the project plan, analyze the data, leave no stone unturned.
Right.
Was the timeline unrealistic from the start?
Okay.
Did the scope creep beyond what the team could handle? Mm. Were there unforeseen dependencies that caused delays?
Okay, so it's about open communication, a data-driven approach, and a willingness to look at the big picture.
Right.
But once we've identified the why, what happens next, how do we actually get the project back on track without descending into chaos?
This is where that collaborative problem-solving mindset comes in.
Oh,
instead of dictating solutions from the top down,
right.
engage the entire team in brainstorming creative ways to move forward. Okay, maybe it involves adjusting the scope, renegotiating the deadline,
right.
or bringing in additional resources.
So it's about turning a potential crisis into an opportunity for innovation.
Exactly.
A chance to rethink our approach and come up with even better solutions.
Precisely. And by framing the situation as a shared challenge,
yeah.
one that requires collective responsibility and ingenuity,
yeah.
you create an environment where people feel safe to contribute ideas and work together to find the best path forward.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
But I can imagine there are times when emotions run high.
Yeah.
And it's hard to stay objective and focused on problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
How do we navigate those intense emotional responses that often accompany conflict,
right?
Especially when deadlines and reputations are on the line.
You're right. Conflict can be incredibly emotionally charged, and it's important to address that aspect of the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to ignore or suppress those emotions will only backfire.
Right.
Instead, create a space where people feel comfortable expressing their frustration,
okay.
concerns, and anxieties.
So it's about acknowledging the emotional impact of the situation.
Exactly.
Validating those feelings.
Yeah.
And letting people know that it's okay to not be okay.
Precisely.
Okay.
It's amazing how just allowing those emotions to be expressed can diffuse tension and create a more open and understanding environment.
It's like giving those emotions a chance to breathe, so they don't bottle up and explode.
Exactly.
And once those feelings have been acknowledged,
mm-hmm.
we can gently guide the conversation back to the problem-solving process.
Yes, it's about finding that balance between emotional expression and rational analysis.
Okay.
And remember, it's okay to disagree
mm-hmm.
as long as we do so respectfully, focus on the issue, not the person.
Right. It's about challenging ideas, not attacking individuals.
Exactly.
And I think that ties back to what we were saying earlier about depersonalizing the conflict.
Yeah.
Moving away from you versus me and toward a more collaborative us versus the problem approach.
Exactly. When we can shift our perspective in that way, it becomes much easier to manage those intense emotions and find solutions that work for everyone involved.
Yeah.
We're all on the same team, ultimately, and we need to remember that even in the midst of conflict.
Wow, this has been such an eye-opening conversation.
Yeah, it has.
I feel like I've gained a whole new toolkit for navigating conflict, not just in the workplace, but in all areas of life.
What's fascinating is how these seemingly small shifts in language, in mindset, in approach can have a profound impact on the way we experience and resolve conflict.
It's all about creating a culture of responsibility, learning, and continuous improvement. And remember, listener, even those moments of friction, those clashes of ideas and perspectives, can be incredibly valuable if we approach them with curiosity, energy, and a genuine desire to find the best solution for everyone involved.
Absolutely. So next time you find yourself facing a conflict, take a deep breath, depersonalize the situation, and focus on understanding the root cause. And most importantly, engage your team. You might be surprised at the creative solutions that emerge when everyone feels empowered to contribute.
Thanks for taking this deep dive with us. Until next time, keep exploring, keep learning, and keep those conflict resolution skills sharp.